Belarus says it has invited European, US and international aviation officials to investigate the forced landing of a commercial flight in Minsk at the weekend carrying a dissident journalist. Roman Protasevich, a journalist critical of the Belarusian leader Alexander Lukashenko, was detained by Belarus authorities on Sunday after the Ryanair flight on which he was a passenger was forced to land at Minsk. The EU and the United States have denounced the act as state piracy. Airlines have stayed out of Belarus's airspace today, and the Belarusian planes could soon be banned from the rest of Europe, potentially isolating this landlocked country apart from its border with Russia. For more, let's talk to Andrew Wilson, who's Professor of East European Studies at University College London and author of Belarus, The Last European Dictatorship. A very good afternoon to you, Professor Wilson, and thanks for taking our call this afternoon. We'll talk about the Lukashenko regime in just a moment, more generally, but specifically this EU initiative now, the details still being worked out, it would seem, of sanctions on Belarus. There have been sanctions before. They don't seem to have had any significant effect. Might it be any different this time, do you think?
Well, we have to try, given how outrageous the act is. That yes, there have been sanctions on Belarus before. They were actually tougher when they were first put on, 2010 to 2016. Some sanctions have been imposed since the rigged election last August, but the last iteration was in December. And most of the egregious things that the regime has done have been since December. There are now 430 political prisoners in jail, not just the unfortunate journalist. So there needs to be something proportionate to that action. And this isn't just about the EU. It's a flagrant breach of the laws of the skies, the 1940s conventions that Belarus is a signatory to, despite not being in the EU.
So initiatives like, for example, banning the Belarusian state carrier Belavia from EU airspace, going after particularly Lukashenko's own financial interests and those of those around him, are those measures that can really strike home, can really hurt?
Yeah, I would emphasise the latter. There are problems with banning air travel, precisely because there's so much political repression in the country. Land borders are basically blocked, supposedly because of coronavirus, but basically to keep people bottled up at home. So there are human rights implications if people can't take the only route out of the country, which is flights at the moment. Targeting the financial interests of the regime is much more effective. They have a lot of money in Austria. And they also export things like potassium, petroleum products to the EU. And they borrow money on international money markets, and that kind of trading can be severely limited.
As you say, Lukashenko has defied international condemnation since the elections last year and before. In this instance, though, the diverting of this aircraft, the arrest and, it seems, forced confession by Roman Protasevich, has he overreached now on this case, in this situation?
Well, let's see. He's clearly calculating that he has immunity. It's a kind of Litvinenko moment or a Navalny moment, a signal that no one is safe at home or abroad, no one in the kind of opposition to him, and he is calculating that we won't respond robustly enough and that Russia will back him. We can't let that calculation be correct.
And how important is Russian backing, and what terms and conditions might that come with?
Well, there was an election last August, which was rigged in the usual fashion, but this time there were mass protests against that egregious fraud. Within about a couple of weeks, Russia decided to back him, to keep him in power. It provides money, it provides political and security assistance. Belarusian TV has been taken over by Russian journalists. So the kind of support is much stronger than it was, but comes at a price. We'll see how much the economy's turned into a kind of de facto colony of Russia's. Lukashenko doesn't want to be forced to sell the kind of assets that he and his allies control. So Russia and Belarus are still haggling over the price of support. So if our response is clever, we can kind of leverage that disagreement between.
Andrew, what accounts for Lukashenko's extraordinary longevity? He's been in power now since the early 1990s. In fact, if my dates are correct, Roman Protasevich was born after he took power. That generation, those Belarusians in their 20s now, have known nothing but the Lukashenko regime.
Yes, indeed. He first came to power in 1994, and Roman is 26 years old, born in 1995. How has he survived so long? Well, coercion, repression is one answer. There have been regular protests at rigged elections in the past, and he's managed to survive them all. The economy used to be much stronger, largely because of Russian support. There were good years in the late 90s and the noughties, during which the economy actually did better than its neighbours, Lithuania, Poland. And that is kind of no longer the case, but he still has the kind of support that he earned in those good years. And there are about a million people on the government payroll who are still reasonably loyal.
You wouldn't be writing his political obituary just yet.
Well, how long can dictators survive just with the power of coercion? Unfortunately, some considerable time, but hopefully you won't be around for another 27 years.
Professor Andrew Wilson from University College London, thank you for that.